Hour three of the nightcap here on VSiN, live from the Circus Sportsbook. Jeff Parles, Tim Murray with you. And we'll talk to Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus. We have chatted with him many a times, and we'll get his thoughts on some prop bets. I know he and his partner in crime there on the PFF Forecast podcast, George Shahuri, have been scouring through the markets, and they've got some bets. So we'll talk to him with his latest a week away from the NFL draft. We'll get you your treats and beats later on in this hour. I tell you what, I have been I've been enamored by the women's volleyball championships here on ESPN. If you're wondering, Texas and Kentucky for the title tomorrow.
Yes, from Omaha, of course, the hotbed of volleyball. Of course, the University of Nebraska, big time program. That's why I was in Omaha, centralized location. And yes, the number one seed goes down to Texas tonight. See, my time covering Mizzou volleyball in Columbia does pay off on national radio here, Tip.
Well, it's how far away is Lincoln from Omaha?
Not bad at all.
Okay.
Bad at all. I believe that's Danny Burke's the resident Nebraska Cornhusker at the network. You know that.
I don't know. Do we have any Creighton Blue Jays? Because they might know a little bit more about Omaha. I've been to Omaha twice in my life and went to the College World Series one time.
So. Very nice.
4:49 to go in the fourth quarter in Dallas. 107-101 the score. Things have slowed down a little bit. It has been a slow pace in this fourth quarter. So we're at 208 right now. Still trending towards the over. It will hit in all likelihood, but not as much of a slam dunk as maybe we thought it was going to be. 215 and a half. So that is where we stand right now. The Mavericks had a strong push at the end of that third quarter, and right now holding off the Lakers in what is, as you have talked about, a very important game for the Dallas Mavericks here tonight. Anthony Davis did make his return, and he played 17 minutes, went 2 of 10 from the field. He had 4 points, 4 rebounds, 1 block, 1 steal, and 1 assist.
Again, I'm with what JVT said. The most important thing for the Lakers with AD was he's back on the court. Mm-hmm. That's a positive. And for Dallas, again, a game you really just can't lose with AD barely playing in his first game back. And hey, credit to them to at least put it together at the end of that third quarter. And they've really held up here in this fourth so far.
Dallas went off as a 3.5-point favorite. Open 2, got bet up to 3.5, and we'll be keeping an eye on that one as things warrant. To baseball right now, we've got 2 games, 1 in the 9th inning with the San Francisco Giants up 3-0 on the Miami Marlins. That was a total of 8, so no extra innings, fingers crossed, for anyone who had the over in that one. And San Francisco looks like they went off here at Circa, a -142 favorite in that one. The interesting one, Walker Buehler has been, I wouldn't say tagged, but has given up a couple runs, including a Trent Grisham absolute blast to right field. And Ryan Weathers, man, whoo, not too shabby there for the rookie for the Padres. Went tonight, what did he go, 5 2/3, 1 hit, 6 Ks for Weathers.
Dodgers did have a really good opportunity in the bottom of the sixth, Tim. They had 2nd and 3rd and 2 outs for Max Muncy, and a huge strikeout coming out of the pen by Austin Adams to get out of that jam. And again, it's not like Buehler's been bad by any stretch tonight. Buehler, 6 1/3, 4 hits, 2 earned, 7 Ks, just the home run to Grisham and some timely hitting by Manny Machado to drive in Tatis back in the fourth.
Yeah, Machado with the lone other RBI there for the Padres. So 2-0 in the 7th inning. Walker Buehler, 2 runs on 4 hits, struck out 7 so far. And, oh, do we have – what were those odds? I don't know if Aaron Oster can pull those up real quickly or our folks back there. Trent Grisham to hit a home run. We had those home run props. Let's see. I don't know if it was on the list.
I think he was. Why do I want to say he was +650?
There he is, 5-1.
Oh, I actually overshot it. 5-1.
They could have cashed a nice little 5-1 ticket. Trent Grisham, the lone homer in that one. Will it be Mac Jones at 3? Could we see Trey Lance? Talk to Eric Eager next, right here. It is a nightcap. We keep it rolling. Final hour of the program live from the Circus Sportsbook. Jeff Parles, Tim Murray with you, and one of our favorite guests. He is from Pro Football Focus at PFF underscore Eric is where you can find him on Twitter. That is Eric Eager, the co-host of the PFF Forecast. I was actually listening to it earlier today. You know, Eric, I'm curious where you are, because you and I and many others were of the mindset that it would be Justin Fields. We weren't buying into that early Mac Jones discussion. And I got a pretty juicy price at plus 260. I think you got something similar in that ballpark. And now, depending on where you look, you know, Mac Jones is odds on at a couple spots. BetMGM, DraftKings. It's actually even money to go ahead of Fields and Lance. So what is your mindset right now when we look at that number three pick? Is there a way in your mind to hedge off a bet that maybe you have placed already on Justin Fields?
Yeah. Hey, Tim, that's a great question. I think that the, you know, when I look at this particular market, like, you know, Fields at, you know, plus 150 or better, Lance in many places at plus 400 or better, you know, Mac Jones at minus 167. Obviously, if you got something like plus, you know, 250, plus 260 as you got it, obviously you can lay it with Mac Jones. To me, though, like, to me, it's just still too much of a speculation game where if you're sitting with a ticket with Justin Fields, I think you're still doing really well, especially 260, you're looking at 30, less than 30% break even. If they're equally likely to go, you have an edge there. And if you even suppress Lance a little bit and say Jones and Fields are, you know, relatively equally likely to go, you have a huge edge there. To me, I think there's some hedge places. For example, Lance, his position is 6.5 in many places. You can get it, you know, I've seen it anywhere from $1.25 to $1.50. Like, I think under there is probably a good bet, because if Mac Jones goes at three, you're probably going to get Fields and Lance coming off a little bit later. I've also seen and bet a little bit of Lance going in front of Fields. That would be one way, again, to hedge the Justin Fields thing, because I do think right now a lot of the focus is on Jones versus Fields. But Lance, to me, you know, checks a lot of the boxes when you look at, you know, sort of what Shanahan likes. I still think it's Fields. I still think the Fields bet's a good one. But the way to hedge to me is more on the Lance side than I think it is on the Mac Jones side.
Well, I just wanted to, you know, the big thing that you talk about and what I really like about the way you kind of break things down on your podcast, and you've, you know, hit on it a little bit there too with, you know, looking at the percentages. So the highest I've found, you know, earlier today at BetMGM, you could have got Trey Lance at 5-1. That is gone. That's 325 right now. Last check at William Hill, you could get it at plus 450. And that for Trey Lance is intriguing to me. So at those odds, is because I agree, we talked about it a lot to start the show, Jeff and I did, Eric, which was, I'm still not 100% buying this Mac Jones thing. Maybe I'm just, you know, being stubborn about it, but at plus 450 with the intrigue of Trey Lance, I think, is that a good enough price to go in on Trey Lance?
Yeah, I think so. At 450, you're looking at about an 18% break even. So, you know, let's say, you know, let's say that you give the market some credence, and maybe it's, you know, 50% Mac Jones, 30% Justin Fields, and 20% Trey Lance. Then you're looking at something of a better than break even bet, and, you know, something to cover your Justin Fields bet if that were to lose. Again, you have a huge exposure there to Mac Jones. Mm-hmm. There's been a number of bets, you know, in this cycle where, you know, it's closed with, you know, sort of the thought process of the rest of the market. This has been one that's been weird, right? And so for me, in my personal sort of betting activity, I have really good numbers on Chase to be the first wide receiver and Wilson to go second. So I've been a little bit more aggressive with this Fields bet because I have other bets that have good closing line value. If the only bet that you're going to make is this third overall pick bet, I think you do want to think about alternatives. So maybe you win, you know, even if you're wrong ultimately on Fields, you still win. So for example, like the Lance under 6.5, or maybe a Fields under 4.5, you know, to sort of like not necessarily have to hit the exacta of the 49ers taking the exact player you think. But for others, if you have, you know, sort of like bets that have a decent amount of closing line value, I still think something like Fields at plus 175 is not a terrible one. I would not have bet it at minus 125 when he was the favorite. But I still think now, you know, given not that actual much has changed fundamentally about the universe we're living in, I still think plus 175 is a good shot there. And as you asked, Lance at 450, I think is at least worth a sprinkle.
Eric, of course, Tim has the bet on Jalen Waddle to go in front of Devontae
Smith.
Have
I talked about that on this show
just
at all?
Just a little bit.
A little bit?
Just
oh,
a little
okay.
bit.
Yeah.
Moving in Tim's favor, by the way. Waddle now minus 150 at DraftKings. Smith at plus 120. Just to play devil's advocate against Tim here, and I'll ask you this, Eric. When is the time to hop in on Smith here, or are we that sure that Waddle is going to go ahead of him at this point?
Yeah, that's a great bet, by the way. And that's one that, you know, was in the favor of Smith about a week ago. And so, again, that's another thing where, again, when you think about, you know, taking long shots on guys like Fields, it often can become the byproduct of having winning bets in your hand, like the Waddle one. That's a great one. Where I would hedge a little bit then, if I have that Waddle over Smith ticket, is I would actually bet the over on Waddle at 11.5 because you're getting a good number there. Mm. There's a good chance, if you look at the way that the NFL goes, last season we thought the world of Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb and to a lesser extent Henry Ruggs. And where did they go? They went in the back half of the teens because the NFL, even though, you know, us in the analytics community, we love wide receivers, we love defensive backs, we know the game is won on the perimeter, the NFL still thinks that Rashawn Slater's a top 10 pick. And obviously, Penei Sewell is extremely valuable. Pitt, and also, by the way, if, you know, let's say the first four picks are quarterbacks, then that shoves everybody else back a pick. And that could be, you know, so if you have a Waddle over Smith, but both of them go pick 12 or later, you can get a nice little middle there. Or if Smith were to go ahead of Waddle, you lose that bet, but you get the Waddle over. To me, I think that's a good way to sort of hedge off what is an increasingly winning ticket that you have with Waddle over Smith.
Talking to Eric Eager at PFF _ Eric on Twitter, co-host of the PFF Forecast. Another bet that I have, and there's a lot of steam on one particular player here, and I'm spacing on the guest that we had a couple weeks ago who was high on J.C. Horn to be the first defensive player selected. So this was a situation where, Eric, I was able to get it on Surtain at plus 175 when Micah Parsons was the favorite. He has since dropped off a little bit. You're finding some spots where Surtain is, you know, odds on. How would you go about the first defensive player drafted market? Because we've seen a lot of money and movement towards J.C. Horn as of late.
Yeah, I mean, previous to the Caleb Farley, you know, back surgery news, Horn was 8-1 to be the first corner taken.
Yeah.
And now on DraftKings, he's 7-1 to be the first defender taken. You're absolutely right about the steam there. And you know, you look at his draft, reminds me a little bit of C.J. Henderson a season ago, where you saw guys like Trayvon Diggs, even Christian Fulton to some degree, were thought of more highly than him. And ultimately, Henderson goes as the second corner, but very high in the draft, Jacksonville, in the top 10, I believe. Surtain, yeah, you're right. When you got him, that's a great number, because I think now you're looking at minus 125. If I had to bet this market, and I wrote about this on PFF.com just a couple days ago, I would bet Parsons at plus 300. You know, I think Carolina might be a spot where he goes. They went all defense a season ago. They kind of have an old school, even though Matt Rhule is new school in many ways, that team sort of acts old school. Parsons could go to 7 to Detroit, who failed there with Gerard Davis a couple of years ago. That he could go to 8. There's also, you know, there's also a chance, for example, that somebody leapfrogs to 10. You know, and that Surtain pick, I think Surtain, everybody thinks that he's going to Dallas at 10. I don't necessarily think that's a lock. Mm-hmm. And you know, a team like, you know, the New York Giants at 11, let's say the Dallas Cowboys go, you know, tackle at 10, shore up that offensive line in a way that which they're accustomed. Then you're looking at the Giants, who, you know, Gettleman's more of like an offensive lineman, interior player type drafter this time of year. He could go Parsons. So at 3-1, I think Parsons is probably the right pick, even though he's fallen over the past few days.
Eric, here right behind us at Circa, they have running back groupings. The group A that I'll ask you about is the projected top three running backs to go off the board here. Najee Harris, an odds-on favorite at -185. Travis Etienne at +177. And then Javonte Williams out of North Carolina at 12-1. Is Etienne worth a bet there at +177, Eric?
Yeah, I just think from a pure value perspective, you look at other books, he's +125 at DraftKings. Williams is 4-1 on DraftKings. Those numbers have moved. Etienne has moved closer to Harris because there have been a little bit in the way of rumblings that there's going to be two running backs taken in the first round. I also think running back is just one of those positions where it's a styles makes fights sort of situation, which is why I'm invested on Williams, who I actually think is the best back. And it just takes one, right? So for a lot of these positions like wideout, O-line, et cetera, it's somewhat clear. But here, you know, you could have a team like Pittsburgh, and let's say they prefer a runner like Javonte Williams. He might not be the best one on the board, but much like Clyde Edwards-Helaire last year, that it's sort of a scheme fit, and you get super surprised with an underdog going there. So, yeah, I mean, Etienne at that number, Williams especially at that number, 12-1, I think are worthy of going, with the first running back selected. I don't think Harris is a value anywhere except possibly under 29.5, because there are some places, I think, where it's 28.5.
Talk once again to Eric Eager. And Eric, I've been fascinated here at Circa because they really went deep, and I give them a ton of credit with, just really anyone you know in college football, they've got a prop bet on. So quarterbacks, running backs, they go deep in it. Jarrett Patterson from Buffalo, they've got an over-under on. And the biggest mover on the entire board, there's been two of them, and the number one is Davis Mills. He opened here 140.5, got bet all the way down to 60.5, and now since has moved a little bit back to 65.5. We know that there's going to be five quarterbacks gone in the first round, maybe even the top 10. And then there's kind of a void. And then looking at, the Bruce Feldman article talking about next year and how that, the projected quarterbacks there of Sam Howell and Keaton Slovis is pretty light. Do you think Davis Mills, with this late buzz that he's been garnering, he lands in the second round? If so, that would mean he'd be under 65.5.
Yeah, I think, there's a sweet spot there, right, with teams like Washington and Chicago, who are probably not going to be able to get into the party in the first round for some of those guys. I think Mond is probably going to go to one of those teams. Kyle Trask as well. In our analyst mock draft, I took Kyle Trask to Miami in the second round, sort of as a backup to Tua. The question is how much of a numbers game is it? We've seen a number of times where you look at 2018, for example, and the over-under on quarterbacks in the first round was 5.5. You barely got to 5 with Lamar Jackson at 32. And at Mason Rudolph, a guy rumored to be a first-round pick, fell all the way to the third round last year with just one quarterback in round 2 in Jalen Hurts. I think the previous year it was Drew Locke. That's a tough one. I think if I had to, I'd probably go over there because I think, Kyle Trask and Kellen Mond are probably preferred to Davis Mills, and teams don't see value in quarterbacks in round 2 because they lack the fifth-year option. After the first, bunch of guys go, to me, it just seems like there's going to be like a huge chasm, there's also the whole idea of teams don't draft backup quarterbacks very high anymore for the very same reason you saw in Philadelphia last year, which was, that it spooks the starter, so I think that they put a little distance between sort of the first round guys who are expected to be the franchise guy and, let's say third, fourth round and beyond, which are guys that are drafted almost exclusively for depth.
Eric, we have about a minute to go here. So offensive linemen, give me one that you would expect to go a little bit earlier than some others would expect them to go.
This one's moved a little bit. I actually like Christian Darrisaw more than the market does. I actually think he's on par with with Rashawn Slater and you know, within striking distance of Penei Sewell. What we've seen Elijah Vera Tucker, his number drift 16.5, 15.5. I think he does go quite early. There's a ton of people I know in the league who love him. But I think Darashaw goes high as well. He's really well regarded, and his statistical projections are very good. So I think Darashaw maybe, you know, he might be one of the reasons why your Waddle over bet to hedge the Waddle before Smith bet hit.
He is Eric Eager, does fine work at PFF, one of our favorites. I know it's a busy time, man. I appreciate it, Eric.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Take care.
There he is, at PFF underscore Eric on Twitter. While we were talking to Mr. Eager, the Dodgers were hitting a lot of home runs, and a lot of people were very happy here at the Circa Sportsbook. So we'll get you updated on Dodgers and Padres in the seventh. While I really liked under first five, of course I didn't play it, that total for the full game, you like the over? Looking a little better right now. So we'll get you updated. Dodgers, Padres, Mavs, and Lakers has concluded. Did the Mavs get that cover? We'll tell you on the other side. It's the Nightcap here on VSiN. It is the Nightcap here on VSiN. It is time for Treats and Beats in just a moment. But let's get you updated real quick. The Lakers-Mavericks game has gone final. Mavericks get the win, 115-110. There was a late three-point attempt from Kentavious Caldwell-Pope with 8 seconds to go. Off the back rim, no good. Rebound controlled by Luka Doncic. Cover for the Mavericks, over hits, 115-110. Mr. Parles, Dodgers and Padres, it's now tied.
Yes, Emilio Pagan, the usually very reliable setup guy for the Padres, comes in. AJ Pollock, home run, okay, no issues.
Irish.
And then Sheldon Neuse, with his first hit as a Dodger, is a home run to tie this game. Again, Neuse, a guy who had been on in the Oakland A's farm system before this year. Dodgers get him for nothing, and now he's getting huge hits in the biggest series in baseball. Padres finally get out of the bottom of the seventh. We are tied at two as we go to the eighth at Dodger Stadium.
You know what? It's Padres-Dodgers. Expect the unexpected. So 2-2 heading into the eighth inning. All right, let's get to Treats and Beats. Mr. Parles will give us a baseball beat here in just a sec, but let's go to the association. Last night on this program, we talked about the Bucks and Sixers game. I think it was the opening line, six or six and a half. I think it was six.
It was six, mostly, okay. Yeah.
And we said, neither of us bet it, but we said, I think it would be Bucks or pass.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty big number. Simmons not expected to play. And, man, we look like geniuses because it was a absolute beatdown, 20-point lead in the fourth quarter for the Bucks. Now, the line right there says 6.5. The final was 124-117. Well, that's a winner. Most of the day, Jeff, this game was sitting 8.
Yeah.
So if you got in late and said, I'm going to lay the 8 with the Bucks, well, you were a loser. And how you were a loser, well, that was pretty brutal because it was 122 to 103 Bucks with 6 minutes and 55 seconds to go. The final 6 minutes and 55 seconds, the Milwaukee Bucks scored 2 points. 14-2 run to close the game for the Sixers. Final score, 124 to 117. If you got in late, that is brutal. And if you got in late, or if you got in at the right time, you could have middled it because, you know, everyone tries to get that 1 point, 2 point window in the NBA. But if you got the Sixers at 8 at the peak, you are a lucky son of a gun and you got it home. 124-117, opening number, covers for the $8, the peak of the market, does not cover, lands 7. What do you got for us in the baseball world?
It's a nightly occurrence now here in the baseball
extra
world.
Innings.
Extra innings, these new rules where you do nothing, you plop a guy on second base, Tim. And tonight, it was in Boston where you got into a problem. And we warned you. We did warn you once the game was tied in the eighth inning on a throwing error by Boston, tied at 3 between Seattle and the Red Sox.
Real quick,
yeah.
Just remind the people, how many hits did the Mariners have?
The Mariners had a single hit in the first 9 innings.
Yeah.
Game goes to extras, tied at 3. What do you think happens, Tim, with a total of 9.5? What do you think happens?
4 runs.
4 runs by the Mariners in the top of the 10th inning. The under loses. The Mariners do get a nice little plus price if you bet Seattle.
You were on
which last night. Which I was on, which was good. But again, this is now a daily occurrence, basically, in baseball, where we see a dead under go over because of the ridiculous extra inning rules. We saw another one today where the Diamondbacks and the Reds roughly scored 55 runs in the 10th inning. It was actually 9. Game had already gone over anyway, but I'm sure someone's sitting with an inning game under and loses by a ton because of it. But look, it is going to be very hard for me to bet a full game under in baseball this year because of the uncertainty of what happens in extra innings now. Now, of course, you can't handicap for extra innings, Tim, but we have now, it's basically a daily occurrence now where a dead under turns into a loser because of these extra inning rules.
Well, and you mentioned Reds and Diamondbacks tonight where you had, what was it?
It was 9 in the 10th.
9 runs in the 10th. Didn't affect the total because it was a 14-11 final. But last night, it did affect the total. Last night, the Reds and Diamondbacks, it was 3-0 going into the ninth.
Yeah.
3 runs from Arizona in the ninth, and then 7 total runs in the 10th. It is brutal.
Ridiculous.
Absolutely brutal. So buyer beware on overs for full games, or unders, I should say, for full games. Talk a little more NFL draft. How about that? Does that sound good? We'll do that.
Good.
On the other side, it's the Nightcap here on VSiN. Football season never ends, and it's time to get your best bets ready for the NFL draft. The teams are evaluating the prospects, and our football experts are looking for betting opportunities. We're looking at team needs, position props, futures markets to find the best bets on the board. Get full coverage on VSiN.com, daily best bet email updates, 24/7 video access, plus we'll be live all night during round one. Brent Musburger, Michael Lombardi, Gil Alexander, Mike Pritchard, all of our VSiN football experts will be a part of that tremendous first round coverage. Learn more and start your free VSiN trial now at VSiN.com. Jeff, I think I'm going to do a big board.
Ooh.
I'm going to set up everything, all the over-unders, and just try to keep track of all these props that we have here on all the first rounders and see who hit, who didn't. Because, you know, as we talked to Dylan Sullivan yesterday, there are more people projected per the odds in the first round than there are spots. And we know there's going to be guys that jump into that first round that were not expected to
right.
be there. So I am very intrigued how this whole thing is going to play out. And I mean, there are just so many dominoes that could fall if Mac Jones goes 3, if Trey Lance goes 3. You know, where does Mac Jones fall? I think that's a really intriguing discussion, is if Trey Lance or Justin Fields goes 3, what's the floor for Mac Jones?
You know, it's a question that we've kind of all forgotten about, because the assumption has been for a few weeks now that Mac Jones is going to go number 3.
Which is still kind of the craziest thing about this whole situation, is if San Francisco, which seems to be the way it's going, picks Mac Jones, who were they bidding against? That's the big question. Because if that's the guy they were going to get, who were they going? Why were they so aggressive to get Mac Jones? And that's why I'm just still a little bit hesitant, Jeff, on fully buying in on the Mac Jones thing. Even though this isn't anything against the people out there who have been reporting it. You know, Michael Lombardi talks to people in the know. I talk to, you know, nobody. I talk to my mom. But I just, who were they bidding against? Now, there is the theory that Carolina coached Mac Jones in the Senior Bowl. Then when this trade happened, then they went out and got Sam Darnold. I don't know if that's far-fetched. Maybe I have no idea. And it might ultimately be Mac Jones, and they're just saying, that's our guy. If we go to three, we don't have to worry about anybody. We're locking him down. But that's why there's just that part of me. There's that shred of me that says, maybe it isn't Mac Jones. And where does he go? Does he go to Denver at 9? Does he fall to New England at 15? Does New England trade up, you know, a couple spots to get him at 15 to one of those teams? You know, what we don't know is we haven't heard anything from Washington at 19. Their quarterback situation is questionable, right? Mm-hmm. They have Ryan Fitzpatrick on a one-year deal. Chicago with QB1 Andy Dalton. They're sitting there at 20. New Orleans. So where does Mac Jones, where does he rate for those teams? So that's what's just so interesting. If it's not Mac Jones at 3, where is his landing spot?
New England.
Do they trade up or they stay at 15?
I, you know what? I don't think you really have to. If Jones doesn't go 3, unless if the Falcons stun us out of nowhere and take Mac Jones at 4, which if Atlanta's taking a quarterback, it's going to be Lance or Fields. Yeah, it's not going to be Mac Jones. New England's the only other team that's picking in the top 16 of the draft that makes sense for Mac Jones. Detroit, that just doesn't feel like a good spot for Mac Jones. If you're Denver, I'd rather just keep rolling with Drew Lock, who, again, turns the ball over a ton. He's kind of a Jameis Winston light with the turnovers, and anything can happen on any single play.
Well,
with
that's
him.
Why I think Denver could be interesting for Mac Jones, because if you bring in a guy with the weapons, look, they've gone out. They've
been
aggressive.
They have the wide receivers.
They've got Jerry Jeudy. Yeah. They've got Cortland Sutton, KJ Hamler. You know, they've got young weapons. Maybe a guy like Mac Jones who gets the ball out quick would make a ton of sense, even though they spent a second-round pick on Drew Lock just a couple years
ago. That just feels like such a bad spot for Mac Jones, just because a guy who was
Pat Shurmur's in year one or two.
It's year two now. He had Lock last year, and Fangio somehow made it to year 3, which I don't think he should have. Anyway,
defying the odds.
I think the guy is a terrible head coach, great coordinator, terrible head coach. It just happens with some guys. But Tim, that just feels like a horrible landing spot for Mac Jones, where he's just going to be stuck basically in game manager mode his entire career, at least while this coaching staff is there. And you don't take the number 9 overall pick on a guy that you're going to make into a game manager for multiple years.
Well, we think that's kind of what Kyle Shanahan wants, is a game manager. Ball out quick, get in the hands of receivers. But let's go back to the likelihood, which is Mac Jones goes 3. So Trevor Lawrence going 1. Minus 10,000 at BetMGM. Jets taking Zach Wilson, minus 2,500 at BetMGM. And then the favorite and odds on at BetMGM at minus 145. Odds on at DraftKings, minus 167. Even money here at Circa to be the first selected between Mac, Fields, and Lance Jones. So, if Mac Jones goes 3, and a quarterback's going 3 no matter what. It's
right.
Quarterback's going 3. DraftKings has a prop. Will a quarterback be selected with each of the first 4 picks? And the price is very surprising to me. It is minus $1.50. So it is the favorite. Now, the caveat is, this is not a yes-no prop. This is not two-way. This is one-way, which makes it completely different, because I would think the no at plus money would be very, very appealing. So that's the caveat to these odds, that there is no. But what do you think? If Mac Jones goes three, do you think Atlanta says, we've got Arthur Smith, new coach, Kyle Pitts is great, but let's get Justin Fields. Let's get Trey Lance. Or does Denver, does New England trade up to number four?
No. I it's a shame there's not a no on this, because I would absolutely bet the no on this, Tim. Again, if you're Atlanta, and it doesn't matter which quarterback is there, unless if you're convinced one of the guys that falls to you is the guy, Kyle Pitts makes your offense a legitimate top five offense right away if you get him at number four.
It's Jeff Parles. I'm Tim Murray. We turn the page, look ahead to tomorrow, wrap things up. It's the Nightcap here on VSiN. This Saturday, VSiN brings you the English Premier League BetCast for the Derby match between West Ham United and Chelsea at 12:15 p.m. Eastern. It's presented by BetRivers Sportsbook. VSiN EPL BetCast is the best way to keep up with the soccer betting action live during the matches. Join Nigel Seeley and Harry Simeu as they talk betting during the biggest match of the weekend. If you're new to in-play soccer betting, they'll show you the ropes and the smart plays of the day. Visit VSiN.com/EPL to tune in at 12:15 p.m. Eastern Saturday afternoon. Once again, VSiN.com/EPL. Wouldn't you know it? Bottom of the eighth inning, Padres and Dodgers in a tremendous game. 3-2, no outs, men on second and third. Padres with a 1-run lead. Can we just get 162 games between the Padres and Dodgers, Jeff? Where's that petition? Sign me up for that.
I mean, all these games have been tremendous, and now a little bit of controversy on that last play.
It was a terrible call.
Will Smith clearly dunking one on the left field line. They ruled it foul on the field, which I don't know how that was possible. They overturn it. It's second and third. It's Max Muncy at the dish now, and a huge spot. I believe Drew Pomeranz is the one who's coming in from the pen now for the Padres, and just a ginormous spot with San Diego ahead 3-2 in the bottom of the eighth.
My buddy, who is a host on Extra 1360 in San Diego, John Schaefer, just tweeted out, can Ryan Weathers please re-enter this game? Ryan Weathers, starter for San Diego, what did he go, 5 1/3?
Five and two-thirds.
Scoreless tonight, so great game yet again between the Padres and the Dodgers here tonight. It is the final game on the board, because going final was the San Francisco Giants over the Miami Marlins. Once again, the NL East has zero teams above 500. So let's turn that page and look ahead to tomorrow, Jeff, and take a look at the NBA slate first. We got Boston taking on Brooklyn, and I believe Kevin Durant is expected back. I know he hasn't been ruled out yet, at least the last check. And the one spot, DraftKings, has Brooklyn laying 5.5. Boston did win tonight over Phoenix, 99-86. So Brooklyn laying 5.5 in that spot. Oh, Oklahoma City plays tomorrow.
Oh, that's always a fun time. Playing your Wizards.
My Wizards, yeah. Through and through. What colors are they? Blue? They red, white? Oh, they're red, white, and blue now. When they first went to the Wizards, they were like light blue and
some gold in there.
Gold, silver, something. I don't know. But the Wizards coming off of their impressive win last night. Now, I give them credit to an extent, but Steph Curry was just off, man.
He didn't play well.
He was, and I think you look at the way Steph was playing. I mean, he was so tired. And Steve Kerr kind of said it. He was like, we ran out of gas. And they still, you know, missed a layup. Was that Kelly Oubre? I think it was Oubre. I'm not sure. Whoever. They missed a layup. would have potentially forced overtime. But regardless, Oklahoma City's a disaster. But can they cover the 9 against the Wizards? That's the number you're looking at. Golden State back in action. Does Steph Curry find his form again? They're getting 3 at home against Denver.
Well, this is where the Jamal Murray injury took place in San Francisco a few weeks ago. That number seems about right to me, Tim. I'm going to steer clear of that. The only number that is standing out to me as a potential play tomorrow right now in the NBA is Charlotte, who just got waxed in Chicago tonight.
Yep.
Second of a back-to-back at home against lowly Cleveland.
Only bounce-back spot?
Only having to lay one. Money line minus 115. That seems pretty good to me with Charlotte at home against the Cavs.
Yeah. Don't disagree. They won, or they got smashed here tonight. The Hornets did, losing 108-91. Really wasn't even that close. Portland home to Memphis tomorrow. I tell you what, man, I like Portland. They're always a fun team to watch. I'm not laying 3.5 with Portland. They just seem off right now. They were right there against the Clippers the other night. Missed that runner on the baseline and lose by 1. But I can't lay 3.5 or anything with Portland at this point.
Well, the counter to that is Memphis just lost to the Clippers B and a half squad.
That is true.
So
they did.
And look. It's
Portland lost to
Denver. That was
me.
Denver. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. In that dramatic finish, as you said there, Tim, if you're Memphis, though, don't you have a little bit of pride after what just happened to you in L.A., where you legitimately, Amir Coffey, no disrespect to Amir Coffey, who's in the NBA, and it does play a little bit.
But I said, with all due respect.
But Amir Coffey started the game for the Clippers, and you lost the game in L.A., where legitimately Marcus Morris Sr. really was the only regular who really played significant minutes in that game for L.A. I don't know. The Blazers aren't right now. I would only bet Memphis in that spot. But
yeah.
That's a pretty significant stay-off in the end, Tim.
I believe Trae Young has been ruled out for tomorrow, and you've got the Atlanta Hawks are getting 5.5 at home tomorrow night. Against Miami, getting 5, excuse me, against Miami. It'd be a pass or maybe even lay it with Miami with no Trae Young in the lineup. We saw them kind of fall apart down the stretch without Trae Young. So that is where I stand. Bases loaded, by the way, in Los Angeles right now. Bottom of the 8th inning, 3-2, Padres leading the Dodgers. Telling you, man, just Dodger-Padres games all the time, please. All the time.
And it's Noyce again, by the way, Tim.
Yeah, AJ Pollock was just up. Did he walk?
They just IB beat him to put him on for the again for Sheldon Noyce, who has not done much in his major league career. Obviously, his first hit was a Dodger, came in the last inning as a home run, or 2 innings ago with a home run. By the way, I misspoke before also. Pomeranz was not entered. It was Tim Hill, who is now in the game, the other left-hander out of the Padre bullpen, who did not have a fun time against the Dodgers last Friday night.
Tomorrow in the Dodgers and Padres game, which we will get to sit here and watch all evening long, Yu Darvish for the Padres and Clayton Kershaw for the Dodgers. Right now, you're looking at a total of 7, juice to the over at minus 120, and Clayton Kershaw here at Circa is a minus 140 favorite.